my name's Louisa, and I am an addict. Shit, it's really good to be here. I'm scared to death. I was at breakfast with my lover this morning, and sheets of tears just kept washing through me. So, you know, and I just had to keep saying to myself that I'm here because I'm a woman in recovery. And I'm a woman in recovery, and it's been a long goddamn fucking road for me to be able to stand up here and tell you I'm proud to be a woman in recovery today. Yeah. Amen. I'm just going to give one sentence to my, or so to my history, my using history, because I really want to talk about the issues that in my experience and sponsors and sponsors and stuff face us as women in recovery. I just want to tell you I do qualify to be here. I'm not here because I knit too much on the weekends. You know? I'm not here because I thought about doing drugs, you know. I'm an addict, hope to die, did drugs for 20 years, you know, and I got to you and I got to this program in February of 1983, you know, and I was sick. I'd been a prostitute. I was a thief. You know, it's like my health was completely shot because of drugs. I came here with most of the symptoms of ARC, you know, of AIDS disease. I came here with a lot of those symptoms, a lot of chronic pain problems. I came here in a relationship that was violent and insane. It was just in the next in the long history of relationships that were violent and insane. I had no idea who I was. I came here with three different kinds of herpes, which, thank God, I still have. the gift that keeps giving. And there were a lot of kinds of things that I didn't know how to talk about at meetings, including that. What I do for herpes is take, it's like, I just want to say this right now, because there's a lot of women that don't know about this, that you can, there's a medication out now called the acyclovir that you can take that keeps those fuckers down and gone. So, you know, if you've got that one, go get some medication and take it, because, you know, it's no side effects, no head trip, and it keeps the damn herpes away. And, if you got the kind of sexual history I have, you know, which is that you slept with anything that walked, too late for the heartbeat. We'll talk about details like what's your name later. that puts me at a high risk for cervical cancer. These are issues for women in recovery. The combination of that kind of sexuality and herpes puts you at a high risk for cervical cancer. So I try and pay attention to my, you know, I try and pay attention to my pussy these days, you know, and try to keep that healthy. Yeah. So anyway, fuck. I'm on tape. All right. Okay, men got their version of the same stuff, you know. Some of the issues that I found that I've had to deal with in recovery, you know, like, well, since I'm talking about that stuff, let me just start off on sexuality issues since I'm already talking about it. Recently, about last fall, a number of us got together and started a meeting for women who had worked or still work in the sex industry. And because we have found that recovery from around that stuff is a real tough thing to talk about. One of the things that I know is that many of us continue to work in some aspect of the sex industry or another well into recovery, and we don't talk about it because we're ashamed. We don't even talk about the fact, a lot of us, that we did that kind of work before we got here. We sure don't talk intimately at meetings very often about what that did to our guts. I think most of us, certainly in my case, I didn't even know what being a prostitute had done to my guts until I got into a meeting of other women in recovery, recovering addict women, and we started talking about that kind of work. I've also come to really know that kind of work is more than just standing on the corner or working a massage parlor, running a nan and turning tricks. You know, it's working as a mistress, being a mistress. You know, it's like phone sex, it's modeling, it's exotic dancing, it's stripping. And a lot of that is stuff that we do out there and that we continue to do in here. And you know, it's what I really come to recognize that about that for me and that the women that I love, because I have come to love women, you know, it's like to have you guys be here is so important for me because I have learned about me from you. If you aren't here, I'm lost. You know, and it's like the importance of Narcotics Anonymous to me that we come together and we look around this room and we are gay and we are straight and we are bisexual and we don't know yet. You know, some of us are still figuring it out, you know. And you know, and actually there's a lot of truth to that because a lot of us have been abused so badly sexually that we really don't know. You know, and it's like, you know, we come here, we're black and we're white and we're Indian and we're Asian and we're Chicano. And, you know, you walk in here and it's like, well, I can't trust those bitches. You know, what does that bitch know about me? You know, so I'm going to stand here and just look cool, you know, and, yeah, you know, and I'm going to do my trip with the men, and I'm either going to, like, I mean, I'll tell you about clothes, some of the trips I've gone through with clothes, either I've gone through stages of recovery or the dress like a whore still, you know, do that number, or else just all baggy clothes. Don't look at me. I haven't got a body. Not me. No body. Right? You know, because there's that kind of shame, you know, and I'm either in a lot of makeup or I'm in no makeup, and you know, hair, no hair, you know what I'm saying, and I got a little pink in my hair today. I did a little pink for y'all. Yeah. So, you know, and all those are parts of, at least for me and most of the people I know, that are parts of, like, figuring out, you know, who am I sexually? Who can I trust here? What does it mean for me? What is my style? What does it mean for me to be a woman in recovery, you know, and like, you know, to begin to talk about, you know, yeah, maybe I'm still using men for money. You know, it's like, you know, whether it's being a mistress or this or that, and the shame and the, you know, because, you know, when I came here, what my body was the thing I put drugs into. You know, it was a vehicle that I had to have to get loaded behind. It's like, you know, if I cut off my head, I wouldn't be able to get loaded. So I had to have this body attached to it. And so, it was about putting drugs into, and it was about using it. You know, like sex for me was all about secondary gain. It was about getting drugs. It was about getting money. It was about getting power and control, or what I thought was power and control, which has turned out to be a total illusion. You know, that whole thing about, you know, I get you, I fuck you, and then I own you, except you really own me. You know? You know, the only way to move beyond the only way that I have found to not be used is to not use. It's the only way that I have found is to go so clean inside. You know, we talk about it being clean in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, and it's like, it's not just the drugs. It's to go so clean in my heart that I really am not trying to use you. You know, like honesty is, yeah. I read a definition of honesty in the NA Way recently, which I love. It said honesty is the lack of any intent to deceive. You know, and that means I tell the truth. I'm the kind of liar that generally, you know, it's like I won't, it's not so much that I say I was a Barbara when I was really over with Deanna, it's Granera. It was more like I just won't say anything. You know, I tend to lie by just not talking about it, not saying, gee, I'm really uncomfortable right now. I really don't feel like having sex. I really feel distant from you right now. You know, I'm really not feeling comfortable with this. That's the kind of lying that I did a lot of. So it's like, how do I move beyond that into not having any intent to deceive? And one of the places where the thing that's been so important for me to be able to move to that is to come to peace with this body as being the temple of God. See, God lives in here, right in here, in my heart, just like God lives in every one of your hearts, or the goddess, whatever you call that, for yourself, you know, because it's like, I'm up here, you know, hi God, this is God, you know, it's like, that's what allows us to recover here. So if I can come to view this body not as this instrument of secondary use, but somehow a holy temple, you know, and then I can begin to not have the shame about the sexuality. You know, it's like begin to move into I mean, let me just tell you the truth. It's like for me, I have always used fantasies, S&M fantasies, to be in bed and not be there. You know, drugs were a great way to be in bed and not be there. Fantasies were a great way to be in bed and not be there. S&M fantasies, the kind I ran, I wasn't even in this century. I'd be back in some 18th century. So, you know, I didn't have to, I mean, I could fuck anything that walked because I wasn't there. Just give me the money, give me the drugs, you know, or tell me you won't ever leave me. I don't really care what the relationship is like as long as you tell me you will never leave me. Yeah? You know? And I will put up with incredible amounts of humiliation and violence as long as you won't go. And see, that's not part of my life anymore. No way. Yeah. What I have come to is a profound respect for myself as a woman. You know, that there's something really deep about being a woman. There's something really beautiful about it. This is a life-affirming program for me, and I have a man in my life right now who really honors that and respects that. And I want to tell you that I know that I am not the woman with him that I have been in past relationships. And I know he is not the man with me that he has been in past relationships. And what that has come out of has been incredible pain. Incredible pain, you know, for both of us. We have, you know, the kind of pain where you're just on the floor and you are just crying and it goes on for months and months. You know, and that has driven me out into doing real intense therapy and him also, for example, you know, real intense inner child work to come to love and honor the inner self, you know, so that we can start anew with something that's beautiful and affirming. You know, and to move forward with something, and it's like these challenges of how do I as a woman be there with this man when I want to be gone? You know, when my critical mind jumps in, you know, it's like, yeah, but he should be. Yeah, but he should be is one word. Yeah, but he should be. Yeah, but he should be. You know, and that critical, that judgmental critical mind, that's another wall. You know, and what it's about is like, what it's about really is like, I'm afraid right now, you know, I don't know how to deal in reality a lot of times, you know, it's like where's the fantasy life and here we are just two addicts in recovery together and here's the daily reality of that kind of relationship and how do I keep opening to that? How do I keep opening to my pain and confusion and yours in that? And that means that I have to come to, you know, I have to be really at peace with my own self in order to be opening to somebody else, because a friend of mine, my friend Pat T, said to me, she said, you know, we attract what we are. Woo! Honey. We attract what we are, and I look back over my history of relationships, and it's like, oh, shit, you know? Yeah, you know? What was I? I was a sleazy, lying, dope fiend, you know, and look what I attracted. But it was their fault. Those motherfuckers did not act, not a one of them. And, you know, and I've, you know, and if I've had to own and own and own my stuff, because the only way for me to have freedom is to go deep, deep into my own pain and my own loneliness and how my own loneliness and fear turned me into this manipulating, lying, you know, kind of person. So that's what I attracted, you know, with people who could be with that. So, you know, those are issues that I've had to struggle with and continue to struggle with. I mean, it's like I'm much, much healthier now. But, you know, it's like being in a relationship, it's like those sexual issues go deeper and the intimacy issues are going to go deeper. And what I gather from friends and people that I know that have been in relationships, healthy relationships for a long time, is that never ends. There's always another opportunity to build a wall and turn that relationship off, and that is also the same opportunity to open even more deeply to some kind of union, and that's whether we're gay, straight, or bisexual. It's like, how do we open to each other and love each other here, you know, and that's with friends as well, you know, and I'll tell you, the friends I have as women in this program, and that opening, and sitting down and saying, yes, I'm going to say this with you, yes, I'm going to say that with you, you know, is a big deal for me. Work has been a big deal for me in recovery and for almost all women that I know. I'm one of these people that, you know, I might surprise you to know that I was sort of a fuck you kid, you know. Fuck you, you know. So, and every way that I could say that, so I started, you know, my parents started like jerking my little two-bit allowance from me when I was really little as to try and control me. So I, from the moment I was old enough just about to walk, I started going door-to-door selling stuff in my neighborhood, you know. And that, you know, later on I started selling my ass and drugs. And so, you know, I got a lot of training growing up in street selling. But you know, that I thought, because I always kind of had my own money, you know, and one of the ways that I would, because of my fear in relationships, I would tend to buy the men. You know, that was my trick. You know, I know there are women that do it the other way. I think they're just the flip sides of the same coin. But, you know, if I tended to have a history of men that I took care of, you know, you sell it over here, you take care of them over here. And, right? Various ways. And so I thought to myself, my denial when I came to recovery, I have no issues about being self-supporting for my own contributions. I've been doing it forever. And, you know, and it wasn't true. I went through some time in recovery where I just started fucking eating women at meetings. I mean, like, just eating. You get them eating women at meetings who were, like, getting divorced and had been supported by their husbands and were trying to get all this alimony and stuff. And it's like, I had to go, you know, and these women had never done it. They were nice people. They were just going through what they were going through. And it's like, what is this, what's going on in me? And I had to really look, and what I saw was that I was tired. I was tired of working. I was tired of taking care of myself. But inside, I had bought the line that if you're a really good woman, if you really do the woman thing right, which I obviously never had, I knew that. If you really did the woman thing right, you got a guy with a lot of money and he took care of you. Right? And I had never pulled that off for a lot of reasons. I was too paranoid to give up that much control, and I just never pulled that one off. And so, when I, you know, it's like I found out that there was a part of me that wanted that desperately, that wanted just to be an eternal child. You know, wanted somebody to just come in and just pay for my ass, you know, on a permanent basis. And I mean, what do people do when you don't work? I don't know, you throw parties and you shop. I don't know. You know, I whatever they do, I wanted to go do that. And I've had to, that's another aspect of feeling a sense of self-respect about being a woman, is that to have a feeling of, no, it's okay, I can feel good and comfortable about the fact that I do work, and I do earn my own income, and I pay my own way, and I stand equal to my partner financially. It's like I'm not beholden. And, you know, it's like what I see here in recovery is I see us going back to school as women. You know, so many of us come in here, we've been beaten up, it's been incest, there's been all kinds of abuse, terror and fear, we don't have any sense of who we are, but we go back to school. And we start to work. You know, we start to find out we have minds. You know, we can be creative and strong. You know, and it's like right on to us, right? Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and I want to talk just briefly about kids. Now, this is another issue that, you know, that for us as women is a big one, is our families. I had, myself personally, so much terror about parenting because of things that have gone on in my family, and I had so much fear about not knowing who the father would be, and just a lot of fears, that what I did when I was loaded was I went and had my tubes fried so that I couldn't have kids. When I came into recovery, I had to go through some periods of intense grieving about that because I never felt it when I did it. You know, it was just another opportunity to go in the hospital and get drugs, sort of, you know. It's just kind of everything, you know, it's like, people said to me, well, how do you feel about this? And it's like, how do you feel about this? Can you imagine when you're loaded, how do you feel about this? It's like when I was in recovery and I first started seeing an OBGYN about CNS and cramps, you know, I noticed I had cramps. And she said to me, and Dr. Fischella says to me, what did they used to be like? And I just looked at her, I just started to laugh. And she knows I'm an addict, and she goes, oh yeah, of course, how would you know? It was true. I had no idea. I mean, you know, oh my God, there's an itch on my finger. I'm gonna make it up. So anything that looked like it might possibly turn into a cramp was, you know. So anyway. So shit. I just have to kind of feel that maybe that was God's will, because I look at the insanity that was in my life when I was using, and I really feel like I probably would have raised Son of Sam, you know, or, you know, like this guy in Montreal that killed all the women saying they were feminists. It would have been my kid, you know. Hot believer boy, yeah. Mm-hmm. Had a great mother. So I don't know. Maybe there's some God's will in that. You know, with my partner recently, there's been some grief about that, because it's like I'm going to be 43 next month, and, you know, it's like for the first time I feel like I'm with somebody that I would want to have their child. And so there's been some real grief because it's too late. And what I have gone to God with that for myself is just to sort of really open up to the children of, like, sponsees, we are family here. You know, this is family, and, you know, this little nuclear family thing is just fucked. It's just, you know, it just doesn't work, and it's much too much of a burden on one or two parents to try and raise kids alone. So it's like to reach out to each other. So I'm taking in kids from sponsees, and then my partner has a son, so I get to spend some good time with him, and I've had children in my life before, but, like, now I'm conscious. You know, I'm really conscious, and I'm noticing the kind of time and energy and attention that I'm willing to really put into the children. And you know, and I just feel with my sisters in this program the pain that a lot of us have about our kids. You know, it's just maybe it's the deepest pain is the pain about our kids here. You know, and it's so important that we share about that, because, again, wherever there's such deep pain, there's a tremendous amount of shame. You know, and what I don't talk about will kill me. What I won't talk about will grow and get ugly. But if I talk about it, it's like, yeah, what do we know about being parents? You know, it's like, where did we learn that? So to share that with each other and to reach out, you know, and I'm going to close, because I want Barbara to have lots of time to talk to her, because I really want to hear her. But I just want to, you know, I do a Buddhist meditation practice, and Buddha said two things that I really like that I use a lot, and one of them was just, no matter how far in the world you will travel, you will never find anyone more worthy of love than yourself. Yeah. Now, each of us here, including the sisters that are here now and the sisters that will be coming to us who are going to be having AIDS, you know, we need to know that many of us are going to be coming in with AIDS in the future, and we need to be ready to open our hearts to each other with that, because this is us. This is Narcotics Anonymous. You know, this is not the Girl Scouts. This is not the Daughters of the American Revolution. You know, we come here as women who have done all the things that they told you never, ever to do. We have no place judging any of us. Not us. Not us. And the last little thing I just want to say is another thing the Buddha said that I really like, which is, it doesn't matter how long we've forgotten. It only matters how soon we remember. You know, and so let's remember here that we are beautiful and that what we have is each other and that we need each other. I need all of you so much, so thank you. Recovery a lot too, you know. And the last time I heard her share, she rocked the house. You know, we were at a meeting on Saturday morning in Oakland, and God said, "That's her. Get her for the meeting." And the thing that touched me was that she said, I said, "Barbara, you know, I'm on the program committee, and would you consider being one of the speakers at the women's meeting?" She said, Graham, check this out. I would love to speak at the women's meeting more than I would love to speak at the Saturday night main meeting for Narcotics Anonymous. So, that did it for me. I know it's going to do it for you, too. Here's Barb. Hi, I'm Barbara. I'm an addict. Hi. You know, I was sitting here and just feeling all the energy in this room, and the thought that came to me was, you know what? I could have missed all this. You know what I mean? I could have just fucking missed all this. And I feel so just happy. I just feel so happy today. It's better than any drug I ever took. You know, at the beginning of the meeting, when there was a couple men, I heard some people say, well, this is the women in recovery, and the men are welcome. And you know, and my feeling about that is that I really like this being a women's meeting. I always attend the women's meeting at any NA convention. It is a must because it is tradition to me to do that. See, and I'm a person who had no tradition in my life before I got here, you know? And I like having tradition today, you know? But I also understand why the men want to come in. And the reason, for what I know as a woman, is that we are healers, see? And they feel that from us, you know? Many of the men come to me, they want to talk to us because we give them that love. You know what I mean? We give them that from the heart that sometimes they can't always get in other places. We have something special in here. I don't know. I don't want to talk. How long do I have? 42? like Louisa, I just love Louisa today, you know? And, I don't want to really talk a lot about what it used to be like either, because we don't have that much time, and we all know what it used to be like, you know. I also am a member in good standing of the Bad Girls Club, you know, and still am, you know. I like being in that club. I never did want to, you know, become Debbie Boone in recovery. And that was one of my fears, you know, that if I worked the steps, that might happen, you know. I've become something I never wanted to be. And you know, and that hasn't happened. You know, the steps, if anything, have given me freedom. And a lot of things that were talked about so far here today, for me, I just want to say, first off, would not have been possible without the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. And would not, no healing would have been possible without a power greater than myself. You know? Yeah.
But I want to tell you a little bit about what my journey was like as a woman in recovery, and that is that I'm no different. You know, all of us come in here and we're so unique. I always, you know, new women always come to me and it's like they kind of pull you aside and they kind of tell you, like, you know, I don't really like other women. You know, like, it's the big secret. The only one feels that way, right? And I just look at them and go, you know, because we all come here like that. And I was the same. You know, when I came to my first meeting, I always like to talk about, I got a cup of coffee, I got a man, and I sat down and got ready to recover. You know what I mean? I was just like that, you know, because I couldn't do this by myself. You know what I mean? It's like when I was using and my addiction, I couldn't do it by myself. You know what I mean? So when I first drove up here, there was no way I could do this by myself either. You know, and that's okay. A lot of times people talk about, you know, don't get involved in relationships in the first year. And I understand, you know, why people say that. But you know what? If you're a new woman here today, and if you're a sponsor, and if you come to me and you work the steps, you can get in that relationship, you know? It's like, you know, sometimes I think we forget and we ask the impossible, you know, of us. Yeah, there's no way. And I was like that, and I got a man when I first came here. In fact, my first meeting when Louisa was talking about, I had a typical problem with no self-esteem and believing that I was my body and the only thing of value was that. And the first meeting I ever came to, you know, I came in and I seen this guy at the end of the meeting, you know, who had a hot, you know, 2 days or something too, you know. And, you know, we just kind of automatically gravitate towards each other. And so he came out and talked to me after the meeting, invited me out for coffee, and this was my first meeting. And I went out to coffee with him, and I think he bought me an English muffin and a cup of coffee, you know, and I went home and gave him head, you know, because he bought me an English muffin and a cup of coffee, you know. I always say that, you know, like, you know, those guys who sell the cheeseburgers, you know, just simple, that I give it away. But, you know, now, you know, I have a lot more self-esteem, and you probably have to buy me steak and lobster, you know? Just kidding. But I got here like that. But you know what I'm very grateful for today is I did come here beaten. I came here beaten. And I came here, something had died inside of me. And that's the only way I know how to say it, is that something had just like died inside of me. And I didn't have any strength. I didn't have a lot of ego left when I got here. I was just beaten and I was just tired and I didn't have no place else to go. And I'm really grateful that I got here like that, because it made me teachable, you know. And I know that you understand, as an addict, it's real hard to get teachable. You know, the dues that we have to pay to get teachable, to get here, are incredible, you know. But I was in that state, and I'm grateful. And what that allowed me to do was to be able to hear some of the suggestions that people talked about. And one of those suggestions was to get a sponsor. And if I could say anything to you, I always talk about my first sponsor, always, at a meeting, because that's what saved my life, was that first woman who became my sponsor. And I didn't even pick her. So I went up to a man after a meeting, you know, because, of course, they'd know, right? You guys are going to know. And I asked him who. You know, who would be good? I need somebody. You know what I mean? And he gave me this woman's phone number. He said, call this woman. And this woman's name was Val. And I had never met her. I had never seen her. But I was in a lot of pain. I was so fucking uncomfortable in my own skin when I cleaned up. Oh, I was detoxing still. I didn't even have enough sense to go to a detox. And I was uncomfortable, man. So I called Val up and said, hi, you know, just like giving your number. And there was something, you know, I really believe that God works in her, because there was something about Val's voice on the phone. She just had this soothing, real comforting kind of voice, you know. And there was something about him then that made me feel like it was going to be okay that day to not take nothing. You know how it is, you get here and we're in that first 24 hours. Man, that first 24 hours, it feels like 78 hours. You know what, if you don't take nothing just for today, when's just for today going to end? But, so I can maybe get a few hours sleep, so I can maybe get up tomorrow and do this all over again. But, and go to another meeting, you know. And somehow Val made me feel like it was going to be okay. And Val said, you know what, meet me at this meeting. And she started to, I met her at the meeting, and I even liked how she looked. And she told me a little bit about herself. And she had been in a lot of places that I hadn't even been. And she was just, I don't know, she was just beautiful to me. When I got here, I could not reach out to all of you. When I came to meetings, I didn't feel like I was home. I feel like I'm home today, but when I got here, I didn't. You all were threatening to me. You know what I mean? I didn't relate to you. I thought I was different. I was unique in my feelings, in my thoughts, and I didn't want to tell you about them. But somehow Val, I don't know, you know, I just felt I could be okay with her. So I connected up with her, and she used to make me come over to her house once a week. Wednesday night was my night. And she would take me, and I would go in her house, you know. And she had she just rented this place. It was like, you know, a three-bedroom apartment. And she had an old man. And she had one of the seven kids that had been taken from her back in her life. And I go to Val's house, man, and she had one of the nice houses. You know, where you go in the bathroom, and have little matching towels and face cloths and little soap, you know, like shells. Just for decoration in the dish, you know, little pictures and everything. And I don't know about you guys, I haven't been in places like that a long time where everything looks like home, you know. And I just go in there and feel safe, man, at Val's. Like, she'd take me in the back room and she would open up the book and she would start to talk to me about the 12 steps. And she started right from the beginning to talk to me about God. You know what I mean? Like, she told me, so, you know what, Barbara? You are too sick to come to meetings and just drink coffee and smoke cigarettes, man. You know what I mean? You are not going to hang if you do that. You have to change. These 12 steps will give you a spiritual transformation. They will change you inside so you can be comfortable in your own skin so you can stay. Now, I'm going to tell you what. You know, I've been a lot of places and done a lot of stupid things, but I was no dummy. You know what I mean? I was no dummy. When she spoke truth, I heard it. I knew she was right, you know. And I didn't know what that meant, the steps, what that was. But whatever it was, I wanted to get some of it because I wanted to stay because I was tired. So Val started me on the journey of the steps. And she started to talk to me about the power. And she talked to me about a lot of things. And you know what? Really, the point is that my first relationship with another human being was with that first woman, with that sponsor. And Val, for me, was my higher power. She was the mother I never had. You know what I mean? She was the uncritical mom. She was the loving, accepting mom. And whatever I told her, I was okay in her book. You know, I never had that growing up as a kid, you know? So it was really, really special for me. And she told me a lot of things, you know, like, you know, everything I know from you guys. Everything I've learned from you, and everything I've learned in the steps. But Val would tell me a lot of stuff back then that you know, they didn't even have in those days. They had none of these other programs. And I swear to God, the power used to just channel through her, man, because she used to talk to me about the little girl inside of me, you know? And this was before people were talking about that shit, right? And she'd tell me, she'd say, you know what, Barbara, the only honest one in there, because she talked about all the personalities, right? Which I love, because finally someone was speaking, so it was like, oh, you know, she talked about all the people in there, and I understood that. I always thought I was nuts, you know? And she was the first one. I said, no, they're little people, and they all have something to say, and I went, great, you know? Like, you know, it makes sense to me. But she said, you know what, the only honest one in there is the little girl. The rest live in fear. The rest live in self, and the only one who's true in there is the little girl. And when my little girl used to come up and talk to me, you know, I was committed, she'd come out and she'd tell me things like, if I came into rooms like this, she'd come out and she'd go, we're scared, we don't like this, there's too many people, you know what I mean? Like, she'd have a little small voice like that, she'd be frightened. And how I would deal with her is I'd tell her, shut up. You know what I mean? Bad. Talk to my little girl, bad, like child abuse, you know? She couldn't tell me nothing. I'd be like, try to shove her down. So Val told me, like, even if I read me to listen to her. What does she want? How does she feel? What's going on? Because if you don't, she's going to, sooner or later, it won't be that little small boy. She's going to start to act out in a big way. And she will get your attention, you know, somehow. You know how they do. You know how it is. And then you're really in pain, you know. So I would start to listen to what the little girl wanted. And one thing that I did for me, and this is just for me, that I want to share this, is that I got a picture of myself when I was real small. You know, and I don't know, I must have been about 3, maybe. You know, when I was just so sweet and pretty, and, you know, just looking kind of out at the world like, you know what I mean? And we're all like, ugh, you know, before we got damaged and hurt, you know? And I got this picture and I hung it up on my dresser. And you know what, if you're new here, this should always sound crazier things they tell you to do. But I put it up there on my dresser. And I would look at the picture every day, and I would talk to the picture of me as a little girl. I'd say, hi, honey. How you doing? You know, I used to do that kind of shit. And then as time went on, I was able to take it from the picture to inside here. You know, like internalize it. So I could go in and say, you know what, you're so pretty, you're so precious, I love you. You know? And this is what I'm saying, it wasn't all overnight, it was step by step, doing that day after day after day after day. You know, it's a long journey and I'm still doing it. And what I love about that today is that, you know, the little girl inside me, the part that, there's one who's just, you know, she's just full of joy and she's beautiful, and then there's a part of me that's still filled with shame, you know? And that part of me, the little girl who's filled with shame, today my feeling towards her is I embrace her. You know what I mean? I'm not even trying to get rid of the child in me who has shame anymore. I just want to love her. Love her for her shame. You know, and it's a good thing. You know, as I went on with the steps, like I say, you know, what I did so different, the first thing in my life, I got that man, sat down, got ready to recover, but he had his house and I had mine. And that's the first time that I did that, where I didn't live with a guy. You know, all my life, my problem was I had so many old men, I couldn't hardly fit them all in my inventory. You know what I mean? I would meet somebody on the corner in a bar, we'd move in and live together for the next 3 to 6 months. You know what I mean? 6 if we were lucky, you know? And this time I didn't do that. I got me a little room to rent. And I had all these little, I moved like 6 times my first year, and I had these little rooms. And I got a job working on assembly line. I was not someone who worked, you know. I was on SSI, you know, and that was my big hustle, to be on SSI, for being nuts. And I got this little room, and I got this little job on assembly line paying $3.50 an hour, you know. And, I mean, I lied. I gave him a phony name, social security number, to job, because I didn't even think I'd be there that long. But I started to go to work. You know, and I started to get my little paycheck and pay my rent, my room, and, you know, all those kind of things that in the beginning felt so hard. You know how we get here now? All that stuff was hard for me because it was 180 degrees out from where I came from. I was like, well, Lisa, give it to me. Take care of me. Somebody do it for me. I don't want to have to do anything myself, man. And I finally recovered. I had to do it with your help. So I would do this. I'd get my little room. I'd pay my rent, you know, and I'd go see this man on the weekend in his house, you know. And I loved going to his house on the weekend because, you know, he had a nice house. I had this little room, no TV, no phone, you know what I mean? Little, just not much, too much stuff. And I'd go over to his house. I'd lay up in his bed and watch his color TV and eat all his food and ride around in his car, because I didn't have a car, you know. And I remember I used to call my sponsor and talk to her about this ride. You know what I mean? And she would tell me one day, she said, you know what, Barbara, you use sex as a power thing, you know, and you use sex as a power thing with this man. You know how a sponsor smiles that shit and get real offended? You know, those are like, I mean, they're supposed to, you know, by now, me and Val were tight, you know, and it was just kind of like all of a sudden like, wow. And I said, no, I love this man. You know what I mean? Totally, no, I love this man. But the truth was, I found out later, yeah, I did do that. He was like the reality of being clean and having to show up and be a productive member of society. I needed some place to go escape on the weekend, man. It was like rough. You know, it was like, it was hard. So I would go and do that. But the difference for me was I started to get something for myself. I started to get some self-esteem because I was doing those things, because I was having my own little job, and because I was paying my rent, and all that kind of stuff. And I've had a lot of history, like, in recovery, too. It's been a long, slow process, you know. Thank God for the steps and inventories and a loving God, as I understand Him. But I know when it came to the part of my inventory about the sexual part of the fourth step, I left it out. And I figured, like, it ain't none of your business. It wasn't even Val's business, you know what I mean? It was like I didn't want to write about it. And what I couldn't own at that time was I was in a lot of fear about writing about it. And so what happened is I went along this program for about 3 years with no sexual inventory and still doing the things that I did. And what I want to, I also know, like, I have, when I talk about those personalities, I have a personality in there. I call her the promiscuous one. You know, you gotta try and do things different this time, right? And then she comes out, and she's just like raw. You know, she is just so out of line, man. So I'm at work one day, and some guy's talking to me, and she's out. You know, I have a rule, never mess with nobody at work, right? And so she's out, and she sets up this incredible fantasy with this guy. What we're going to do, he's going to come in through the room that, you know, in through my window at midnight, you know, crawling in my bed and all this kind of shit. You know, I don't know what she was up to. But the guy showed up at midnight. I don't even know this man, right? Crawled through my window, and the only one who's in the bed is the little girl. My recovery is gone. You know, is that I have to pick up a price for some behavior that I'm doing that will become so painful to me that I will get, what I did was the next morning I got on my knees. I called Val. And I can't tell you, like, that ain't no big deal. I mean, I've had sex with so many people, so many ways, so many different places. So what? That it was something that happened inside of me that made me call Val. I got out that pad of paper the next day. I wrote an inventory. I met Val in the Rose Garden in San Jose and read it to her that same day. You know what I mean? It was just so painful I had to get rid of it and that I was his. You know? And I can't, all I know was that something happened inside of me that I was ready to once again in my recovery say, I'm going to do it your way, not mine. You know what I mean? I'm going to do it your way, not mine. And, you know, so that started me on my first celibacy trip, you know. You know how we'll go on those? I'm going to be celibate. I'm just going to learn to be your friend, you know. But you know what I did? I did do that. I stayed celibate for
long time now, over a year. That time. Yeah, there's been other times that ain't by choice, you know. I have women come up to me and go, God, I'm so horny, I haven't had sex in 2 months or something. I just look at them like, you don't have a right to complain yet, man. I ain't even have, you know what? But what that started for me, and this is what I'm talking about, for me it's all a spiritual journey. See, I come here and I may think I'm doing this and I'm doing that, but the truth is that I'm on a spiritual journey. And I believe that's why I'm even in narcotics, was brought to narcotics, and I'm, why I'm here. You know, and it started this journey of where I was going to start to do more healing within and start to meet some men and be their friends. And all I know is that, you know how it is for us when you go through these things, painful experience and recovery, and then you take it to the steps, you take it to your sponsor, and then you take it to God, and all of a sudden, you realize that you are not going to be the same anymore. And I've been, you know, and sometimes when I have those heavy lessons, the power will bring it to me one more time. Like, he'll bring in this guy who's the kind of guy, you know the kind of guy, that has big muscles, tattoos, convict, kind of, you know, guy who ain't going to do nothing but give you grief, kind of guy. Give you long grief. But look so good, you know. Has all that exciting stuff about him, you know. And he'll bring me in one right away to see if I get the lesson. You know what I mean? And I realized I did. I got the lesson. And that is, like, that's what I'm saying about this power, man. I'm so grateful. I can't do this on my own. I can start out and say, I'm going to do it your way. But without God's help and your help, I can't. I am powerless. I am powerless. But what I found out, which was what Louisa talked about, was when I made that change inside myself as a woman, all of a sudden, I started to have nice men brought into my life. You know what I mean? Men that could give me something emotionally, spiritually, physically, all of it, financially. You know what I mean? All of it, man. You know what I mean? Because I can give that to you. You know, if I can give that to you, then that's who I'm going to have. And I don't know, you know, I'm just real excited. I mean, time's almost up, and I'm just real excited to be here and to be clean just for today, man. You know, I mean, I got here and came to the convention this weekend, and I got my own room for the first time. I'm going to be 10 years clean in June. I got a birthday party. And this is the first year I had, well, me and my honey had our own room. You know what I mean? That's a big deal. Now, I'm still a poor woman. You know what I mean? And maybe it won't always be that. I was born a poor woman. I've been a poor woman in my recovery. Hopefully someday I'll have some money, you know. But right now, I mean, but so I'm excited. I get excited to come here and go up in the room and go, look, there's a TV in the bathroom. Yeah, man. I said, I'm going to make a telephone call sitting on the shooter here just to do it. You know, I have fun. I have fun, you know. But you know what? It's like when I talk about being poor, I'll tell you what, Narcotics Anonymous and you women and the men and all of you in the steps and this loving God, I am a very rich woman in spirit. I've been overpaid. I came here just looking to not take nothing, you know, just to not take nothing and maybe be crazy the rest of my life, you know, and instead I've gotten so, so much more, you know. I mean, I found a loving God here, and I found women who have, the women here, like I said, I didn't like them either when I got here. I didn't want to have much to do with you, and it started with Val. And then my first best friend,
You know what I mean? And what I found is I found out who I was through you. And you guys have been willing to hold me, to rock me, to love me when I couldn't love myself. And you gave me that. I brought my teacher here just in case I had to cry. You know, and you have healed me. And, you know, for the new women here tonight, you know, just keep coming back and be who you are. You know what I mean? And if you're, you know, and I went through my phase, my mini skirts, and my come fuck me shoes, I wear to every single meeting. And I still do. You know what I mean? Because what I found out here through myself and through the steps is that I can be whoever I want to be. You know what I mean? I can be anything I want to be. You know, dreams do come true here in our Narcotics Anonymous. So thank you for letting me come to share. It's been such a